Danny and Dusty.
My Uncle Gus is the uncle that likes to work the grill. As soon as he walk in the house, he's like, get away from that grill. You don't know how to start no fire.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
We're going to eat a hamburger, okay? Here we go. Chad, throw the match. Now that's a fire.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm not cooking a brontosaurus burger.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Danny and Dusty. I'm down in Eugene for the YouTubers, the party people partying on the YouTube stream. You can see I have I brought down another camera, and you all can see what I usually am looking at. I turned it around so you weren't looking at the back of this narrow little studio I do my show from when I come down here on Wednesdays. We've got a nice little view of Autzen Stadium back behind me.
Where it never ends.
Yeah, it's kind of nice not seeing just a blank office wall and white door behind you.
Yeah, I thought I'd class up the joint a little bit. And
well, as much as you can anyway.
What I'm looking at on every Wednesday when I'm down here. But I am down here. Danny is up there. You will be... Look, we're burning the midnight oil on this show. You are going to be hosting... You guys, you got the show coming up tonight after the debut of the Blazers on K2.2 tonight.
Yep. So we'll get the 2.2, and if you're on, you can watch the game on Comcast. You can watch the game on Fubo or Blazer Vision. And again, wink, wink, nod, nod, come January 1st, more streaming services will likely be available.
Yeah, Comcast, I believe, channel 302 and or 1170.
Yes.
Hey, what am I hearing, though, on this standard def only?
No, none of it's...
What ended up happening is misinformation.
So what ended up happening is they converted the channel to HD on the 16th and pushed it out was a requirement. You're supposed to give at least 30 days, but you can do it without that. There's FCC regulations around it. Comcast did not grab the HD feed and flip it over. So it was on HD and everything else, which is...
Well, it was on an HD channel, but I checked it out and it was... It's not an HD broadcast.
Yes, and that was, if you're watching on Comcast, that would be the case.
On the old 1170.
Yes, yeah. that should be rectified tonight. So
okay, for the game.
Yes.
And Rip City wrap-up in high def.
And then you can also watch...
I don't know if the people need you in HD, but...
Look, I don't want HD. I've gone no hat for the first time.
We can check out all your gray hair coming
in. It's throwing the Barry Melrose around.
Do we know when they're actually going to show up, like on the program guide for Comcast?
That is an individual thing. If you remember with working with them years ago, each station has to update their program guide, and so for whatever reason, they didn't. And I don't know how often they do it. If they do it like every other day, if they do it once a week, if they do it twice, or, once every 2 weeks, whatever their situation is, it should be rectified shortly. But again, that kind of goes out with that FCC compliance that goes out.
All right.
And they're supposed to do that. That gets, like, again, super techy and nerdy, but...
That's the stuff you're good at.
Yeah, it's true. For everybody who keeps DMing me, texting me, tweeting at me, if you live in Bend or the Deschutes County, Blazer Vision is your best option between now and January 1st. And even in January 1st, it may not be solved because geographically you live in a dead zone. I'm sorry.
All right.
So they are working... Both the Blazers and K2/Sinclair are working on options, but because of the topography of the region, broadcast television has issues out there, and doesn't matter who it is. That's just the nature of that beast.
Okay. So. All right. So Blazers are on tonight, 7 o'clock, against the Golden State Warriors in Moda Center.
The Blazers are currently 6-point dogs.
Oh. I think they're probably going to be underdogs in what, like... 78
games. That's my lock of the week.
I said we went until like late.
Taking the Warriors minus
late
six.
January.
Beat the Bucks.
Get in the door to the home opener for $18, according to ESPN right now.
That's about right. I can imagine that. But
okay. Times are tough.
The Blazers were not a favorite until late January last year.
Good Lord. So I could see that happening again this year.
Yeah, it's as of right now, it's still a 6-point line.
Right now, the favorites to win the Super Bowl are the Kansas City Chiefs. And watch out, NFL. Chiefs are in the hunt for the three-peat. Today, it was reported DeAndre Hopkins will be heading to Kansas City. They're finalizing a deal between the Chiefs and the Titans that would send a fifth-round pick that could bump up to a fourth-round pick if DeAndre Hopkins plays 60% of the snaps for the Kansas City Chiefs for the remainder of the year and is on the and they make the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Super Bowl.
And remember, DeAndre Hopkins was playing on a team that had was bereft of talent and a quarterback. And according to PFF, he's the 49th ranked wide receiver, sandwiched in between Deontay Johnson and Alan Lazard, and just behind Keon Coleman and CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's, if you're wondering, like, even with broken quarterback play, he's still like right on the fringe of being a number one wide receiver.
I was just going to say that, like, with all of that said, he's had Will Levis and Mason Rudolph throwing him the football. Yeah. It's been a dumpster fire in Tennessee right now. And this is like, and that is the thing. Is DeAndre Hopkins what he was in Houston
No.
when he was with Deshaun Watson? No, absolutely not. He is not. But when he is paired with Patrick Mahomes, Mahomes is missing a reliable receiver on the outside that he could throw the ball to. Now you also have the factor of Travis Kelce keeps the defense honest as well, and he will not be getting as much attention and coverage because of the fact that DeAndre Hopkins is there. Oh, by the way, you have Xavier Worthy, who's keeping the safeties out of attention because he is a vertical threat that you need to respect. You can do a lot of things. You cannot disrespect speed in the game of football.
The other thing I think is really important.
Noah Gray has been playing pretty well, too.
Yeah. Noah Gray has, because when you take Travis Kelce away, somebody's going to be open.
Especially when you've got Worthy, who can take the top off, and Mahomes, who's going to work through his progressions the right way. The other thing I think is actually really important, because this is what has been successful for the Chiefs, beyond their defense, it's been their ability to run the ball in
no
crucial
doubt.
Situations. Do you know where DeAndre Hopkins is ranked in run blocking?
No, but I know he was always really good.
He's right behind Brandon Ayuk, Tim Patrick, and Amon Ross St. Brown. He's 20th.
Here is something too. Great receivers block.
Mm-hmm. And he's a solid frame wide receiver. Like, he's not a guy who's going to lose a lot of battles on the edge.
I mean, I don't, in the their run game, their scheme, they'll like to get outside, but I mean, having that guy there who is committed to it, it's another plus for the Chiefs. They're 6-0. Patrick Mahomes has not been great. Their offense has been clunky at times. Their defense is playing lights out. This is a home run for Kansas City. And again, this is not the DeAndre Hopkins that the Houston Texans had. And nobody should frame it as DeAndre Hopkins of the Houston Texans. But what this does is it gives Patrick Mahomes another reliable weapon. And we've seen a lot of guys who are not elite receivers thrive with Patrick Mahomes. And when he has an elite receiver, Tyreek Hill, they're an unstoppable force. But we've seen him do it before with lesser talent than what DeAndre Hopkins has. And DeAndre has a little bit of gas left in the tank. This is a big move for KC. If you're a Chiefs fan, I know our Chiefs homer is going to be chiming in. And he's got to be through the moon on this, because it opens up a little bit more for your offense. And that's all the window that you need to be in contention for a three-peat.
And they gave up, at worst, a fourth-round pick. They didn't give up anything.
No, and here is why Kansas City makes this move. They're 6-0. They're running the ball really well. They're playing defense at an incredible clip right now. Their defense is really good. They saw, just like everybody else did, what happened on Monday night. In the Baltimore Ravens, they may not be as good as they have been defensively. Offensively, they are better than they ever have been before.
Yeah. And this is the best offensive team that the Ravens may have ever had as a franchise.
And you are going to need to be able, if you're going to run into a team like Baltimore in the playoffs, you've got to be able to score points.
Because they're winter-proof, too. You talk about them playing in the Northeast, but they can sit there and go, hey, you want to deal with this 260-pound running back for 30 snaps?
No.
By all means, go ahead. We don't have to throw the ball. We can sit here and, like, we can be just good enough defensively, hit a couple plays over the top, and then bludgeon you to death with this freak for the rest of the game. And, like, you look around the rest of the NFL, who of the competitive teams can do that? The Bills can't do that. The Chiefs can't do that. You just start looking in the AFC and you go, Yeah, they're good running teams by committee.
Houston can do it with Joe Mixon.
Yep, and it's like it's a short list, and so you got to go, okay, so we've got to find a way to maybe make it to where they can't lean on you in the run game, that they have to, that their defense isn't diverse enough to handle all that you could throw them at offensively. It's kind of switching into a counterpunch situation of, instead of trying to stop somebody, have enough on the offensive side to make them have to lean more on the other side of the ball.
No doubt. I'm excited for it. Hey, I saw this from Pro Football Focus. I wanted to jump into this. Who's the best rookie in the NFL right now? Through 7 weeks, who's the best rookie in the NFL? Pro Football Focus dove into the top 15 performing rookies. Definitely a surprise at the top. But I thought this list kind of shed a little bit of light on some of the guys that we thought were going to be exceptional and maybe haven't been, and some of the guys who flew under the radar and are popping in a big way. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. I'm just a sexy boy. I love this song so much. This is my favorite. This is like my favorite wrestling song. Sorry, Hulkster.
It is a little known fact they wrote this about me.
Yeah. I bet they did. Sorry, Stone Cold. This is my favorite. Even when the glass breaks, all bets are off.
Yes.
I still love, I'm a sexy boy, Shawn Michaels. All right. Pro Football Focus it went through their best rookies after week 7 of the National Football League. Now, the sample size is getting a little bit bigger, but they just went through and they said, these are our highest graded players through the first 7 weeks of the NFL season. And a spoiler alert in this, a couple of the guys that a lot of people thought would be up there as rookie of the year aren't even on the list. Caleb Williams, not on the list.
Nah, that first game was so bad. His general score is going to be pretty damn low.
Rome Odunze, not on the list. Hasn't been a huge factor. But there are a lot of names that people were considering as some of the tops, like Jaden Daniels of the Commanders. Malik Nabers in New York is on that list and is fairly high up there. Marvin Harrison Jr. is even on the list. But when you look at the top 15, I don't think that it is any coincidence. Most of these guys are defenders, right?
It's easier to catch on.
It is. You're playing the reactionary side of the ball. Defense always comes before offense. It is a little bit easier to come out and shine on the defensive side of the football. And when you look at it, 7 of the 15 are defensive players. Mm-hmm. 2 of them are offensive linemen that are in there as well. Actually, 3 of them are offensive linemen. Zach Frazier, center for the Pittsburgh Steelers, is on there. Joe Alt, the tackle, and by the way, Frazier comes in at 5th.
I say Frazier's got a crazy grade.
Yep, he comes in at 5th. Joe Alt of the Chargers, left tackle, right tackle. He is at 10th on the list. And then Dominic Pooney, guard for the San Francisco 49ers, comes in at 9th. So 3 of them are offensive linemen in there. Wide receivers, you look at Marvin Harrison Jr. He comes in at 12th on here. And remember how bad his first game was when everybody was like, what is going on with, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr.? And you watch the film and you watch the cut-ups of him. It really wasn't him. And
There was something going on between him and Kyler.
They made a massive point of this on Monday Night Football, in kind of the breakdowns of Monday Night Football. But when you watched the game, people were begging for, like, Petzig, the offensive coordinator for the Cardinals, and Kyler Murray, get the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. Marvin Harrison Jr. was open, and he wasn't throwing him the football. Like, they ran a lot of sit routes, a lot of spot routes, a lot of curls with Marvin Harrison Jr., and he was open. Kyler Murray just never gets there. Mm-hmm. It's the damnedest thing.
Yeah, there's something between those two, which, I mean, when you're talking about personalities, is that really a surprise?
Yeah, no, not all that much. And they got a win out of it, but Marvin Harrison Jr. comes in at 12th. Mm-hmm. Brian Thomas Jr., the LSU receiver, he comes in at 8th for for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And he has been playing well, but their team just isn't. Malik Nabers, the New York Giants, is 6th on the list. And he was out with a concussion, but when he is on the field, he's been really productive.
Yeah, among PFF grades, Nabers is 11th for wide receivers. Thomas is 15th. Not just for rookies. It's overall for wide receivers.
Overall. Mm-hmm. The top five, Zach Frazier, Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. Andrew Phillips, a corner for the New York Giants, which, I mean, you get a third-round pick and you have him as the fourth graded out corner in the NFL. Not too shabby. Mm-hmm. Jaden Daniels is number two, commander.
Which he's doing stuff that not even rookie, but a quarterback in the NFL hasn't done with his completion rate and yards downfield. McAfee had JJ Watt on this morning, and they were diving into some of the stats behind his rookie season so far, and what he has done so far is absolutely bonkers. So that this class is rounding out to be in the shape where he's not even the best graded rookie is pretty impressive.
So they have their adjusted completion percentage, which takes, you know, drops out of it, mm-hmm. takes like misfires from your receiver as much as they can tell out of it. His adjusted completion percentage is 80.7. Jaden Daniels.
Yeah,
through 7 weeks.
That's insane.
He has been playing out of this world. The marriage between Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels is working. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, I've long said this, elite play caller, not a great head coach. Mm-hmm. As the offense coordinator for the Commanders, he is clicking on and firing on all cylinders. Number two, and I think that the top two, with how good Jaden Daniels has played, I think it says everything you need to know about how well these two are playing. Number two Raiders tight end Brock Bowers is number two.
He's been an absolute monster. He's been the only redemptive thing about the Raiders this year. And not even just good. He's putting up like big dog numbers in an offense that is absolute garbage.
Yeah. And they know at this point, without Devonta Adams, without Jakobi Meyers, who was just cleared for a return for the Raiders this week, there's one option.
And he's still getting open.
And he has been playing absolutely phenomenal. He's everything that everybody could have hoped he would be coming out of Georgia. He is number two with a great PFF grade of 88.3. And the number one, and I think this is a surprise. It was a surprise to me when I read it. But if you're a Packers fan, it should not be.
Quack, quack, quack.
It is safety Evan Williams. Yeah, the former Oregon Duck, 89.4.
He's the fifth rated safety in the NFL this year.
That is a bonkers. And I mean, he was a Fresno State transfer. His brother Bennett Williams, who also played at the University of Oregon. Evan Williams was lights out for the Ducks last year. And that transferring over to the National Football League, through the first 7 weeks, Evan Williams is grading out as the best rookie in the NFL.
Real quick on the
it's not the best bourbon either. But he's the best. He's the best safety.
Tell me if you notice anything about this group of safeties. This is the top six safeties in the NFL according to PFF.
Huh?
Brian Branch, Xavier McKinney, Kevin Byard, Brandon Jones, Evan Williams, Kirby Joseph.
That's, on the surface, I don't see anything
that's two Lions, two Packers, and a Bear.
Oh, yeah. Well, good secondaries, huh?
Pretty damn good.
Some pretty good secondaries in the NFC North.
Uh-huh. Josh Metellus is number 11. So, and he obviously with the Vikings. So, in the top 11, seven of the best safeties, that's, you know, strong and free, seven of the best overall safeties in the NFL are on four teams.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And Evan Williams, and this is like what the Packers do, though, right? He was the fourth-round pick, 111th overall off the board. Their plug-and-play development and scheme fit, I don't know what their secret sauce is. The Green Bay Packers do it better than anybody else. Period. Like anybody else.
This is why they are what they are. It is a machine.
It is
need to be studied by science, you know?
I
don't know if it's computers like or what it is.
There's a blood cult that's, you know, when you become a front office member in your, like, late 20s, when you go from, like, being some sort of GA at some school and you work your way up with the Packers for 30 years and they bring you in and then it's like, you know, they develop you in a way from the top down because they don't ever bring anybody in from the outside. It's always development. To be fair, this is also the Ravens. Yeah. The Ravens don't bring anybody in from the outside. Yeah. It is mildly cult-like, and he's like, well, you know, it's like, it's worked. And it's worked through multiple GMs. It's worked through multiple, you know, I mean, with the Packers, ownership is different. But it's just consistent no matter what. And it's like, they just keep finding dudes everywhere, every single year.
It's multiple coaching staffs. It is multiple regimes, but I think that what you said, it is exactly why they are so successful, in that their front office is homegrown and they stick to the same recipe of development. They stick to the same recipe of what we look for are the R identifiers in whether it's culture fit or stylistic play fit. They marry those together so well. And that comes from continuity in your front office. I mean, there's no mistake there that the most successful franchises in the NFL aren't the ones that have one GM or one owner all the way through and just, you know, it's they knock in one head coach and knock it out of the park. It is when you establish the culture, develop, grow younger people underneath, and there's that, it's the trust tree organizationally, because I think what Green Bay is showing is that you don't have to have the same coach. Hell, you don't have to have an owner, right? You can go through different iterations of how your front office looks, but your core, it remains the same, and success breeds success. And they've got that secret sauce. But Evan Williams, former Duck, being the number one overall graded out rookie in the NFL by Pro Football Focus, the former Duck, a fourth round pick, and playing really well for the Green Bay Packers in the back end of their defense. So good on him. And I was looking at this. This rookie class is really good. I mean,
we knew it was in the quarterbacks, but like beyond that, it's really good.
Caleb Williams isn't even in the top 15. Mm-hmm. And that week one, yeah, he did have a clunker. He had a couple clunkers out of the gate. But he's been playing more and more consistent football, man. This rookie class is shaping up to be really good top to bottom. And I think a lot of it has to do as well with the guys who took the COVID year and came back and were fifth year and sixth year guys. It was another year for development. And there's going to be one more of them too that I think coming down the pipeline, these guys that had the awareness, and with NIL being a factor in that, I don't have to jump to the NFL too early. I can stick around for another year. The biggest fan of NIL is the NFL because it allows guys to grow a little bit more. It allows front offices and franchises to look at how does a guy react when he gets a couple $100,000, gets $1 million in his pocket. What does he turn into then? Because that was always the wild card, right? You get a teenager, you throw a couple million in his pocket. How does he react? Mm-hmm. Now you're finding that out. And I think the NBA and the NFL are going to be the two entities that benefit the most from the NIL.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just to see what that impact ends up being down the road.
Yep.
So,
yep.
It's better than having some of those post-COVID draft classes, that's for sure.
Woo-nally.
Sure, we're going to go with that. Hope it works.
Well, I mean, you've seen it in recruiting classes too with college football.
Guys coming back.
Yep.
It helps guys, everybody.
Those COVID guys that were five-star guys but
maybe not.
Didn't pan out because the COVID year we didn't get a true evaluation.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're seeing it in basketball as well too. Guys are you get the Dalton Connects of the world who go from Northern Colorado to Tennessee and stay in college and end up getting drafted in a spot that they absolutely would not have had they not had the opportunity to go get that money instead of trying to chase it overseas or on a two-way contract. So,
yep.
Coming up next on our worst day on the web, one of the most terrifying situations I could ever imagine. I am not claustrophobic, but imagine if you're out hiking. Do you ever see 127 Hours?
I did, yeah.
Okay, that kind of happened again.
What?
Yeah, they didn't have to cut it off, but
somebody
got smashed by a boulder. Thankfully, they were able to be rescued in a sufficient amount of time without...
Jeff, I know you were listening. You know what to do. He said, when he said they didn't have to cut it off, you know what to do.
Yeah, that's
you know what to do.
But get to that and more coming up here on Danny and Dusty. But first, here's the Big Kahuna Sports and Update.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
A woman in Australia had what I would call one of the most terrifying things happen to her.
Oh boy. At least this is why I don't do Australia.
Look, Australia, everything can kill you, even the land.
Oh boy.
A woman out for a hike lost her cell phone in between two boulders out in the wilderness, and while reaching for it, she fell head first and got wedged between the boulders. Upside down.
Nope. Upside down?
Upside down for 7 hours.
Oh, no.
Her friends worked to try to get her free, and they were out in New South Wales, out in the wilderness, in Laguna, Australia, not Laguna, California.
I'll go to Laguna, California.
Right?
I love Laguna Beach.
I'm not going to lie. This place kind of looks a little bit like here, if I'm being honest. The trees are more Australian-y for sure, but otherwise the general topography and greenage and rockscape kind of looks like here. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, so they ended up getting basically 20 emergency crew workers out there after her friends tried to get her out and couldn't, and their 911 is 000. Weird that is. Huh. Nothing had to be cut off because they did find her in time and she was with friends. But basically they had to set up a rigging system that would remove the boulder enough, but not basically it's a 500 kilo boulder that they had to winch out of the way. But
I am not familiar with the metric system.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Okay, I got this for you, Russ. That is 1,102.31 pounds.
Okay, so a half ton.
Yeah, so a half ton. There you go.
Yeah.
So see? A half ton boulder.
All of this reminds me of the Nate Bargatze, George Washington bit.
No, only for these things.
Yeah, we have a word for. A ton will be 2,000 pounds. And what will 1,000 pounds be, sir? Nothing. The rest of the world will go on an easy-to-remember system called the metric system. And we will go on the metric system? No, we will not.
We have a game called football that is played with your hands. Oh, so you never kick the ball? That's not true.
That's not true. How many points do you get for kicking it, sir? 3, sometimes 1.
It's so good.
It's a great bit. Okay, sorry.
No.
It's harness.
Swirl.
No, it was perfect. It took a couple hours, but they were able to get her out of there. But they had to basically rig up a system where it would allow her to get out of this spot, but also they had to reinforce and like build a frame around it so it didn't fall a certain way and turn her to goo.
Oh, boy.
Because 1,100 pounds, there's no stopping that.
Oh, boy.
You don't have to worry about pinching it off. It's just going to crush you to death.
Oh, make that a clean drop. And I can move on and I can say, okay, so tell me again, how does this happen where you get wedged in upside down?
They doesn't state, but I'm assuming she was laying on her stomach and like reaching down into the hole kind of a deal. Yeah. And she did the lean, and then went down. On this note, this is a grim tale. Did you see there was a school was being sued by parents for negligence when they thought originally it might be murder. Young kid, you know when you roll up the wrestling mats and stand them up vertically? There was a set of those, and a kid, somebody threw his phone up there and fell into the mats. And he reached in, and there was just enough space. And, you know, when they're rolled up, they're like 10 feet tall. And he fell in head first and broke his neck. Died.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, but they were like, it's just dumb. Dumb stuff happens. But same kind of thing where he was just kind of leaning, and then in like the opening, you know, opened up a little bit because it's not stable. I would assume the same kind of situation happened here where like she kind of slowly and then it was like, oh, no, I'm gone.
Gosh, so, that's a terrifying tale, though.
Yeah, no, it is. I came across that, I can't remember just the other day, but yeah, it was, what, talk about a crappy way to go, man.
Our algorithms, again, very different.
A lot more death on mine.
Very different.
But yeah, she was able to be saved, and she just had some minor scrapes and probably didn't feel great. I don't know what you guys, have you ever done like the inversion table?
Yeah.
Feels good. But I had one at home, and I didn't lock it out.
Oh, no.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, no.
I went past vertical.
Oh, buddy.
And thank God.
You got stuck there?
I did, but my girlfriend at the time happened to come by because she needed to grab something, and I was screaming.
Hey.
Like, because it doesn't matter how strong your abs are.
Mm-hmm.
If you go past the vertical point, when you try to sit up, it goes backwards. So it's like there's no reaching it. And so I was stuck there for probably 15, 20 minutes.
Will help.
Bordering on blacking out. And I'd been much longer, I would have. Like, they don't say that she doesn't, but how do you not black out upside down for 7 hours?
Yeah, I don't get either.
Did they give her something?
Was there a way for her friends to like go and like maybe go beneath it and push her up a little bit? Like, that's the only thing I can think of, and like give her a little bit of relief. I don't understand. My question is, what did the Instagram picture look like? I'm assuming that's what this was for.
I tell you, the one that I'm seeing right now is literally just her feet pointed up at the sky in between the rocks.
Oh.
Well,
that's gnarly. That sounds awful. That sounds awful on every...
Yeah, no, it's terrifying. You know, we could have gone another way for worst day on the web. Apparently,
okay, what do we got?
Brandon Aubrey is too stupid to get out of jury duty.
Did you see that?
He wasn't at practice today because of jury duty.
This kicker for the Dallas Cowboys. No, I think that basically what we're seeing here is he was like taking a look around the room and be like, dude, I'm the only guy
here
who's doing my job right now.
I'm good.
I'm the guy who doesn't need to be here because all y'all don't come
sucks
on Sunday.
All you got to do is be like, you know what? He just looks guilty.
That's how you get out of it.
Yeah.
100%.
Leave it to the kicker.
Yeah.
Leave it to the kicker.
Finger before text line. I'd rather fall and break my neck than be stuck upside down for hours between rocks.
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, we're not talking paralyzed, but like, you know, minor fracture of bone. Like that 7 hours had to feel like seven months.
Yeah, that's a really long time to be upside down.
God, man.
Back is broken.
Yeah.
Spinal.
Yeah, no, then there's the 127 hours one, obviously, where the dude cut off his own arm with a pocket knife.
Doctor said I need a bacchiotomy.
That to me is like, I mean, that's a level of desperation. I mean, to be fair, it's like it's dead at that point. It's been smashed to oblivion, but still. That's it's so bad.
Man.
That makes my stomach just do circles.
I don't like that. I don't like that. Yeah,
I want no part of it.
Have a great lunch, everyone.
Are you claustrophobic? Are either of you guys claustrophobic at all?
No.
Yes, incredibly so.
Incredibly so.
Yes, I get uncomfortable watching movies based in submarines.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Or like, what was that Ryan Reynolds movie where he was buried alive in the coffin? Yeah, can't do that. Can't watch it.
Mm. I don't know that Ryan Reynolds movie. What
I forget
movie
what
was
it's
that
called. Give me a second here. I'll find it.
Ryan Reynolds buried alive?
Yeah. Like, stuck in, he's in a coffin, and he's got, like, a Zippo lighter, and that's it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, it's called Buried.
Yeah, there we go.
Imagine that.
Clever title.
Yeah, Buried Alive is, like, top three worst ways for me to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. A civilian truck driver in Iraq, Paul Conroy, falls victim to a band of insurgents. an unknowing length of time. Later, Paul awakens in a coffin with little more than a lighter and a cell phone and an ever-growing anxiety. Yeah, sounds like Rust when he had that. He had a cell phone and ever-growing anxiety watching that movie. Huh.
Yeah. Wow. Sure did.
No, don't like that.
Boy, yeah, that movie sounds terrifying.
Yeah, I don't do well with that stuff.
It was a 6-minute movie because he ran out of oxygen and died. Huh. No.
Well, and then on the other end of the spectrum, somehow even the claustrophobia does this to me, but the movie's like Open Water. Can't do that either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just, it's like weird comparison, but no. Yeah, it's just.
Submarines don't bother me. It's the cave diving ones.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say.
Cave diving. Yeah. What is it? The Descent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like what the one where they soccer team, the soccer team that actually stuck? Went yeah. Did yeah. Like no, I'm not doing that. Like, nope. Don't get in watery cave yeah. Out.
No, look,
that's not good.
Yeah, no. There's good. The Blue Grotto, which is off the coast of Italy, which is like a big cave on that the ocean flows into. It's actually where I was going to take my wife to propose before she said she was afraid to travel that far. I could do those, like the big open ones. But if I can't like put my arms out comfortably in a cave,
yeah,
nope,
yeah, like you're not getting me. You're not getting me going with the old Midwestern. Oh, gonna squeeze right past you here.
Yeah, no. No.
Sea like, lion caves in southern Oregon on the coast?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Like, look, big enough caves?
Yeah.
Like, even like deep dive, like way down there caves, like in ancient ruins type stuff, I'm down.
Yeah.
I'll do that. But like the second I feel the pressure on my shoulders, mm-hmm. or if I got to turn sideways and it's not working.
Or like there's ones where they're in the water and it opens to a cave and they got to go dive down through the water and swim through something to come up on the other side.
I'm okay if I can see the light.
Yeah, nope, not good.
I gotta see the light.
Not good. No,
but
thank you.
Or if you got me a scuba tank.
I'll take the zero, teacher.
Yeah. But yeah, no, those are, when I was in survival school, they put me in a box, naked. And it has like little latches on it, and you can... You don't know this because you've got a bag over your head, and they slide a barrier in and out depending on how big you are as a person, but they smush you down with it real good. And with my knees, and I didn't know at the time, my hips, I was in truckloads of pain, but that leaving me in there and having like a sackcloth bag over my face and not being able to see while knowing I'm in a box that I can't like literally can't move in other than like wiggle my fingers and toes. That was a lot.
That didn't sound fun.
No. I was, they put us in lockers and like blared metal music with the most intense light you've ever seen in your entire life. And again, you're naked and you have a crap bucket in there with you.
It sounds like a good time for you, though.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I was in there headbanging. Yeah, no, it was great. No.
It's like our hell week in my fraternity. We got woken up at 3:30 in the morning to, what was it, the opening of Pink Floyd's Time. It's like the alarm clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, awful.
Yeah, this is playing for, like, we're talking 24 or 48 hours, so you're sleep deprived. So that part of it, not fun. But, yeah, put me in the locker with the poop bucket and the metal over the... Over the being smushed in the buried alive box.
Not great.
Like, box.
That was the other one in college, too. We had an event called Gentleman's Case. You had from midnight till noon to drink a case, and we were all down in the basement and no bathroom breaks. All you had was a strategically placed can for your, you know, duties.
The poop bucket.
Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
All right.
I did finish it 1 year and topped it off with a 22 of Pyramid Hefeweizen.
Of course you did.
And the rule was, if you participated, you also had to go to class the next day.
What if you didn't have class the next day?
Well, you know, you did.
Oh, okay.
You were just there loaded.
Perfect.
All right. Well, coming up next, we'll get to a couple of news and notes in the NFL, including the Browns front office trying to backtrack already. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. The great Diana Rossini was on a bit of a roll yesterday when she talked about Cooper Kupp potentially being available, the Kansas City Chiefs being the ones in the market for a big receiver, which they went out and got DeAndre Hopkins. And also on Le Batard, she mentioned that the Cleveland Browns are already having a little bit of a bloodletting around Deshaun Watson following his ruptured Achilles.
Things that I've always been told is, well, winning fixes everything. If they won, none of this would be a problem. They would be cheering for him and they would look past all these issues. And then we see when they don't win how the reaction is. And that booing, I know you said that has to do with football. I actually disagree with you. I think the booing was because I don't think Cleveland has ever wrapped their arms around Deshaun Watson. I don't think that situation was ever something the Browns fans really, truly were signing off on. I could also tell you there were people in that building that weren't always comfortable with that signing and with that contract and with how that all came together. It's why a lot of teams that were definitely in on him that wound up, you know, losing because they weren't willing to give him that guaranteed money. There's another side of that story where I know teams that, yeah, they would love the Deshaun Watson quarterback that we saw in Houston, but they weren't comfortable with the situation and the things that he was being accused of.
Hmm.
It's certainly interesting as you take a look at how this is shaping up in that this is a CYA situation. You had somebody who very clearly was pushing to get Deshaun Watson. Ownership signed off on it, and everybody just kind of falls in line afterwards. But it very much sounds like there's plenty of people in that front office who are like, let me go ahead and leak out. I wanted nothing to do with this. And there's others alongside that same line as well. And they're getting out in front of they weren't booing him because of football. I mean, they probably were, but also there is a pretty strong majority of people in that city. Like, I have a lot of friends who work in Cleveland, who live in Cleveland, who are Cleveland sports fans. And I when that deal happened, and throughout that, I've talked to them, and they're like, no, we never liked him. Like, because of what happened in Houston and because of the lawsuits, you throw the money in the contract and the poor performance on top of it, and we despised him. And it's like, I think that's been the general sentiment. Don't you?
Yeah. I would like to think that, but I think that turned after last season. I think heading into last season, a lot of Browns fans rationalized, hey, well, we got a quarterback. We need a quarterback to take this team to the next level, and we got a guy who can do it. And as you saw him play, and you're like, no, this ain't it. I think everybody turned on him when Joe Flacco came in and played the way he did. And we're like, we don't need this guy who is a creep and a scumbag anymore. And that's when they did turn on him. There is a large swath of the Browns fan base that never liked him. And those people are getting dragged into everything else. But the biggest problem is that when ownership not just signed off on the trade, but gave him $245 guaranteed, everybody's like, what are you guys doing? And that, to me, that may be somebody in the front office trying to convince everybody. No, this is ownership making that call. And this is ownership saying, no, we are going to hitch our wagons to Deshaun Watson, the player and the person. Because the franchise quarterback, there is no line of delineation between the two. Your quarterback is your franchise. Full stop. I mean, we know it.
It starts and ends with them, yeah.
It's the most important position in all of sports, ever. So there may have been a few people in that organization that did not sign off on it, did not like it. I believe that wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. But the big decision makers, they're the ones that did. And
because you had to on the guaranteed, on the guaranteed contract, you had to.
No doubt.
So, I don't know. There's going to be a lot of finger pointing, and that organization is just, again, ownership. That's what actual bad ownership looks like. And you're seeing it in Carolina. You're seeing it. They almost had enough talent to overcome it. Had Deshaun Watson's arm not fallen off, like Deshaun Watson, despite everything, despite being an absolutely awful human being, if Deshaun Watson was the quarterback in Cleveland that he was in Houston, there would be a framing of him that is very different.
They would rationalize that move.
That is a top four quarterback in the NFL.
My thoughts on him would not change. I would be disgusted with
him. I mean, you could say the same thing. You look at Tyreek Hill. You could say the same thing about Ray Rice. You could say the same thing about Ray Lewis. Like, just go down the list when the talent is overwhelming.
A sliding scale.
Yeah. Well, let's not also forget, too, how they reworked his contract knowing that he was going to be suspended for the entire year so he wouldn't lose out on as much money as he should have.
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I'm not letting the Browns off the hook.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, but that's just it was just another part of the scumbaggery, I guess.
So, it's a lot of the, I don't want to say rats running off the ship, but everybody's trying to CYA right here, which, I mean, if your name is somehow attached to this contract, Bobby Marks in the NBA is always kind of laughs and kind of like, yeah, well, I was on the office staff that traded for, Pearson Garnett and Gerald Wallace that ended up with Damian Lillard in Portland. So,
yikes. Thank you.
Shut up, Bobby. He's a real one, though. He jokes about it, but, that's the life you live sometimes when you've got, again, an owner looking to do certain things. And speaking of Blazers and basketball, let's get to the NBA. Let's make our picks for the NBA season coming up in hour number 3 here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.